Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5. South Jersey's talk station.
Hey, welcome to Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of May 11th and 12th, we have a really packed show going on. We're going to be talking late season turkeys, and we're going to be talking weak fish with Captain 2 Live Crew. Have a lot of announcements. Sort of an early Happy New Year, May 17th. Sea Bass opens. This has just been, even on a freshwater side, it's just been incredible going on. Just a couple of announcements. Don't forget, it's Thursday, May 16th. New Jersey Marine Fisheries Council meeting is scheduled for 5 p.m. at the Stafford Municipal Building at 260 East Bay Avenue in Manahawk. And for details, 609-292-7794. Don't forget, May 19th. Governor's Surf Fishing Tournament, the Governor's Surf Cup. Still, you're going to have to register on site, but it's a great day, great event. And the way the surf's really starting to light up with Stravis, some big blues showing up. For more information, go to njfishandwildlife.org or call 609-748-4374. And June 1st and June 2nd, great, great fluke tournament, just outstanding. It's the Raging Raymond Fluke Tournament. The captain's meeting is going to be at the American Legion Post 493, 420 Radio Road in Little Lake Harbor, a.k.a. Mystic. Entry fee is $100. For more info, call 609-845-7635. Whoa. The last of the trout stocking for South Jersey, the Morris River and the Cohansie done, but there's still, especially in the Morris River and also down there on Ponder Lodge, found a lot of trout going on. Man, have I seen some monster chain size, a.k.a. pickerel, being caught. And bass. Oh, boy. Just the other day, guy measured, had this little scale there, 20-something inches, 5.6 pounds, in a public water. And basically a suburban park, hiding in plain sight. Hey, man, we'll be right back. Rock and Fin Radio. Joining us, Ron Jones, ACP Rednecks Pride Outdoor Products. Talking late season gobblers. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
This is South Jersey's talk station, WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Are you already doing digital advertising sales? Do you know all about targeted display, social media marketing, the latest in SEM and behavioral targeting? If so, you could be Townsquare Media's new advertising sales star. We're looking for passionate sales professionals to join our media and digital advertising team. If consulting and connecting local businesses with their ideal audience for growth sounds exciting, let's have a conversation about you working for Townsquare Media. The right career choice is all about timing, and right now is the perfect time to join our team as an advertising account executive. Our comp package is amazing, with unlimited earning potential, including base salary, 401k match, and more, along with world-class training and plenty of room for growth. If you're competitive, driven, and have the ability to communicate great ideas, we want to hear from you. Reach out to Michael Rubel, Market President, at 609-910-5249 or visit careers.townsquaremedia.com. Townsquare Media is an equal opportunity employer.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5. South Jersey's talk station.
It is indeed crunch time turkeys. This coming 2 weeks, we have the period D of the gobbler season. The advantage is far less people in the woods, a lot less interference going on in the woods. The downside is, well, I'm going to leave that to our upcoming guest, Waishing Paintly for us, is Ron Jones, president, owner, ACP, Rednecks Pride Outdoor Products, master maker of calls and scents, including fishing scents. I hope he has some catfish scent left, because it is coming up. Ronnie Jones, how you doing? Thanks for joining us. Gobble, gobble down, brother.
Tom, how you doing, buddy?
Lock, cock, and ready to rock right this time of year. I'm going insane. So, Ryan, we were talking about the other day, and like, burning up the weeks. What are the 3 weeks, 4 weeks? So it's period D. The one advantage, again, you're able to hunt to sunset. But, Ron, this extended hours, let's get right. I want to jump on that right away. Then we'll get into the nuances of see if any gobblers are still horny out there, people. That's the name of the game. But, Ron, the advantage now, or is there a distinct advantage, again, except for opportunity to be afield, to this later closure?
I think the main advantage is the opportunity to be out there. Also, if you've been putting turkeys to bed, for the last 3 weeks. Now you have your opportunity to get that bird while you're putting it to bed. Sunset is the deadline, but you have your birds there. As far as calling and stuff like that, I don't think there's any more of an advantage. I think it's just you can see the birds. You got longer hours in the field, and you got a better chance of killing a bird.
Now, Ron, public land or private land, they have been pressured. You think the gobblers are, besides, you know, the hormones winding down, you think they're still even cagier than in the early going, especially after the first week? They've been called all over the place. What do you think?
I think most of the turkeys in the state of New Jersey do not hold themselves into a 50-acre or 100-acre farm. So I think you could say whether you're private or public, all birds have been pressured, especially when you're talking about Zone 20, 21, the South Jersey area. I mean, that was sold out the first day.
Right,
so,
yeah.
You know, you've got a lot of hunters in the woods, a lot of calling, a lot of I'm gonna get myself in trouble saying this. I do not believe turkeys get call shy. They're still going to come to a call. They may get cautious.
Whoa! You're saying even on heavily hunted public lands, Jones?
Well, yeah, it's the same.
It's not that you don't have 40 years' experience. I'm just asking.
Well, they're still coming into the call. Okay, they may not be as stupid as the first day, but they're still coming to the call. And people say, well, why would they do that? Well, they're still trying to get lucky. All right? I mean,
he put it nicely, people.
you know, it's I believe turkeys get more setup shy than anything. And that's probably the wrong words to use. I'll give you an example. My best bird that I killed, I don't know how many years ago it was a few years ago. It had one spur was 1 7/8 inches, and the other spur was 1 3/4 inches. Okay, and it was the last day of D season on public land. That turkey had been hunted every day for the whole season, and the only reason I knew about that bird was because a friend of mine called me up and said, I can't hunt that bird on the last day, and everybody's been trying to kill this bird, and it's got 29 lives. Go see if you can kill this bird. And I went in, located the bird, and did picture perfect calling. I mean, I impressed myself. Okay. the bird came in, peeked over a log, disappeared. Right? And shut up. I mean, coming in, gobbling the whole time. I knew exactly where he was at. I saw him peek his head up over the log. He put his head down and disappeared. And I was doing picture per, and I'm not a competition caller, but I can call a little bit, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it was picture perfect, great. It would impress you, Tom, if I was doing that calling, okay? The bird came in, peeked up over the head, saw the situation, put his head down, disappeared.
Wow.
For about another 10 minutes, I couldn't do anything. Exasperation, I took an old washed out diaphragm call that I had, and I just went berserk with what I call turkey ebonics, okay? Meaning I said the right words, but I
wait,
said
wait, can,
it like...
Can you say that word, ebonics? Oh, yeah, go ahead. I'm
ebonics.
Just
can you say that word? I hope so.
We'll go. I'll check with Coleman.
Yeah, but it was washed out. It was terrible. It was the right words. It was just terrible calling. If you heard me calling, you would have said, my gosh, this guy has no idea what he's doing. And within 10 minutes, that bird was dead.
Ron, just the strangeness of something different?
Yeah, because everybody was coming at him with picture-perfect stuff. And as soon as he came in, he knew he was coming in. He knew he had to come in, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as he looked at the scenario, something didn't feel right, meaning he peeked up over. There was a rise with a log. I still remember.
Right.
There was a rise with a log. And when he peeked his head over, it was wide open, no hen. Okay, now you can say I could have had a decoy there and all that, but
next he'd been question. Hunting with Go decoys ahead, yeah.
still. Okay. Yeah. He knew this was a bad place to be at this particular time. It wasn't until I threw something different at him, okay, that he probably second guessed himself and said, you know what? Maybe go check it out. And it was a long shot, I'll give you that, because I wasn't going to give him a chance this time. But when he came in, I took him with bad calling, in other words. So that's why I say I don't believe in the true word of call shy, because call shy means they don't come in at all.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Another thing you're going to see in this late of the season, like you said earlier, they're tuckered out, man. I think we had an early breeding season anyway.
Absolutely. And we saw that up in turkey hunting area 12 and one of the other areas. Whoa, yeah. Already on a nest?
Yeah, which is what the season
was. And that was the first week. That was A week.
Yeah. But A week, I was seeing a lot of single hens, you know, first late, last late, which is telling you they're on a nest. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you had that early, easy, good breeding. Then you went into A season, now you're B season, now you're C season. By D season coming around, I saw two toms on a hen yesterday, all puffed out. Yesterday afternoon, I'm going to set my sights on him for Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me. But they're, for the most part, they're all tuckered out, all right? Also, if we understand the true way of the turkey, is the hen comes to the gobbler, not the gobbler goes to the hen.
Exactly right. Yeah, you're doing a reversal here.
Right, so we're trying to pull him in, and that tom who's made it through the season, he hears the calling. He says, that sounds like it's promising. So now he stages out in that field 60, 70, 80 yards, okay, and he just hangs up. And
come
he's
on.
All, he's
come
all
on.
Fluffed
Ma-
up.
Mama, where are you, baby? Come on, Mama.
Yeah, because he knows what's supposed to happen here. She comes to him. Now, he's looking on the edge of that field, and it's a mistake to set up, and we all do it, all right? We set up right on the edge of the field, and we're calling from the edge of the field.
He said that for my benefit, people.
Well,
he does.
You're
killing me, Jonesy.
I'd like to be on the edge of the field because I can see. It makes me feel good. I just sat up against a tree, and I'm on the edge of the field, and I got a wide, you know, wide range of shooting going on. Well, he comes up. He stages 80 yards out, and he's fluffed out. Now, why is he fluffed out? He goes into the strut because that's showing the female, here I am, here I am. It's his calling card, okay? He's now looking at the edge of the field because he knows that hen's supposed to be on the edge of that field. He don't see no hen, okay? So he says, you know what? If she wants me bad enough, she's going to come because I'm tuckered out and I can take it or leave it. I hate to say it that way. But,
well, that's what I say. But, Ron, which begs the question. He looks around and there's no hen around. Would it be advantageous at this point of the game to utilize decoys, a hen and maybe an aggressive
you
Jake
can,
decoy?
You what can. And I'm not partial to decoys because I've had a lot of problems with decoys with other hens. But in the late part of the season, a decoy, either a Jake or another or a gobbler decoy or a hen decoy with a hen decoy there would be probably a good situation. But what I typically do is I move back into the yards 30, 40 yards, or back into the woods 30, 40 yards. Okay.
Oh.
Now the hen call is coming from inside the woods. So if he doesn't see her, at least in my mind, I'm thinking this is human thinking. It's probably not even true, but in my mind, he's saying, well, she's back in the woods and she can't see me, so maybe I got to sneak up just a little bit more.
Can you give us an example of that call, Ron?
Well, just a regular old yelp. You know, your hen yelps. Your hen yelp will be.
Okay.
Okay. I do a lot of yelps and clucks. I do a lot of. Soft, but a lot is what I do. I don't do it hard. I do it soft. But then what you really want to do, if I'm back in that woods 20, 30, 40 yards where he can't see, I do the hen sounds, but then I do the gobbler yelp.
Let's save that to the next segment. We're up against a hard break. I want to get into that. And is there still any validity or effectiveness to a Jake or a gobbler challenge? People, grab that cup, grab that rebel. We'll be right back with Ron Joes, president owner, Rednecks Pride Outdoor Products, master maker, calls and cents. Be right back, Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG, Talk Radio 95.5. Bullet points.
I'm Evan Brown. You still can't DIY your firearm in Colorado. The state passed a law they claim would eliminate so-called ghost guns, and now a federal district court is refusing to restrain the state from enacting it while a lawsuit seeking to overturn it plays out. The law supporters say it must be unlawful for Coloradans to build their own firearms, either from kits or from parts they may fashion. They claim it is a way for criminals to avoid background checks and to use firearms with no serial numbers. And there are concerns over the use of 3D printers, though one can't 3D print a fully assembled and operational firearm, only parts. But the people suing to stop the law claim it is an American tradition to build one's own guns, and that many law-abiding citizens still do it. It is expected the plaintiffs will appeal this ruling. And those are your bullet points. I'm Evan Brown, Fox News.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5 and the WPG Talk Radio app.
Here we go. Look out below. Back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of May 11th and 12th. A very important weekend in my life. If I remember, I'll remind to remember this and get it in on the final closing segment. May 11th, 1968. We're on the line with Ron Jones. We're talking late season crunch time gobblers. Now, Ronnie, the gobbler challenge. Possible that you will, again, scenarios out in the field and you're hitting some hen things. All of a sudden, here's another gobbler sound off in close proximity. Will that get his ass in the air saying, hey, man, you want to let's get to it or maybe race to that hen? What do you think?
No, it could. I hear a lot of guys who've used it, and I have in the off seasons when there's no guns in the woods, I have done gobbles myself, and it's worked. Okay. Being D week, I don't know that I've got the guts to do a gobble, okay, in the woods. Because, especially on public land, because that's, you know, I don't, you know, yelps bring other hunters in. A gobble definitely brings other hunters in. So I don't know that it's smart to use a gobble, but if you're on private land and you know nobody's on there, yes, I believe a gobble will work, just like a Tom's yelp works. Now, I'll do a Tom's yelp pretty quick. A Tom's yelp is more hollow sounding, if you will.
Do one of those, man. Wow.
Your hand would be your gobbler or your Tom. Okay. First time I ever heard one, I thought, what the friggin' heck is that?
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
And the Tom walked out and he's yelping like that. So I mean, if you're back in the woods just a little bit, he can't see that Tom is staged out there. He can't see the hen. He hears a hen, and all of a sudden now he hears a Tom yelp. That works pretty good. It doesn't work all the time, but it works pretty good. Just like I think if you did a gobble, especially if you could do a Jake gobble, a short, quick gobble. But again, I'm not promoting that just because safety reasons. I don't think it's too smart. The same thing is don't use a fan as a decoy, even though it's against the law to use it in New Jersey.
Ron, I used to be pro that why not, especially on private land or doing private land, but you never know who's going to be on your property.
I've noticed a lot
more instances of trespassing. Well, Ron, what about when the toms get tasked? In other words, you'll hear a gobble and then they shut up. One of the most memorable, phenomenal hunts I ever had was with, shout out to you, Carberry, retired artificial reef coordinator, great turkey hunter. Ron, it was the last day. That's when it closed at 12. That's how many years ago it was. First light, heard the bird come down, gobble. He gobbled back. High C is his nickname back then. Hit him with a couple of calls, gobbled, and then just shut up. And then you heard a gobble, you know, maybe 15, 20 farther away, and he just disappeared. We decided to stick it out. We were maybe 25 yards from each other. We were both in plain sight against a tree, some brush, whatever. And Hugh was doing the things, you know, the stick on the ground through the leaves, things like that. And it just seemed for hours and hours. And all of a sudden, Ronnie, out of nowhere, you heard this faint gobble.
Yep.
And then it got louder. And I looked at Hugh. He looked at me. I shrugged my shoulders. You going to call? No, he didn't. Then it sounded pretty close. And then he let out a few little hen yelps. And in he came, man. Head bright blue, rabbit. This gobbler was fired. Shot dropped at about 30 yards. It had to be the same bird, because you had said he had worked him several times the week prior. And now that bird didn't say for hours. Ron was just quiet, going on his merry way. When they are tacit like that, they don't want to talk. How do you get them in?
You just wait them out. I mean, that's the curse of it, because I call it deer hunting turkeys, and that drives me nuts, because I'm a running gunner. You know, I want him in and out. You know, if I'm working him, as long as he's talking, I'll sit there for eternity. But if he's not talking, it drives me nuts. But I'm a more aggressive caller. Now, again, aggressive does not mean loud.
Okay, I was just going to ask you to qualify that.
Yeah, that does not mean loud. It just means talking a lot. And again, if you know, I get into discussions a lot with a lot of folks who are really good turkey hunters, but they're in the woods in turkey season. And I say, well, once you come out with me in June or September or October or November and sit for 2 or 3 hours just listening to the hens talk, and you may change your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most people aren't crazy like that, like I am, but I pay myself to do that, okay? But a flock of turkeys is talkative, just not loud. All right.
I've seen that. Yeah.
They're little peeps.
Yep.
Or. Or the growl. Just like a chicken scratching.
Mm-hmm.
Right. All these, I do a sound where I call it a growl with my diaphragm. I sound just like a chicken scratching on the ground. And you want to talk about driving the turkeys nuts? Those toms that wasn't talking, all of a sudden you do that what I call the growl with a cluck. They just open up. So me personally, I'm an aggressive caller, but not loud. And the reason I call it aggressive is because most guys do just what you did, one or two sounds, and then they shut up for 2 hours or 3 hours.
Mm-hmm.
Now, with that being said, that tom knows exactly where you're at.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So, again, going back to the natural way of things, all right, the tom says gobble, gobble, gobble. The hen goes, and if she's in a romantic mood, she comes to him. If she's not in a romantic mood, she just continues on with her what I call flock sounds and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
If he's early in the season and his hormones are crazy, he's running to her thinking, can I get lucky? All right. Later in the season, he's saying, not so interested.
Okay.
So D-Week is always, I always consistently, if I'm going to kill a good bird, it's always going to be D-Week, all right? But it's going to be different type of hunting. And you stage on your areas where you know the birds are going to be. and you do your calling, is a lot of guys in your blinds do very well in D week, because by this time they've seen where the birds that are left, where they're hanging out, and you put your blind down and you just wait them out, and you got all day to wait them out. So it's deer hunting, more or less. So I'm not crazy for that, except for like today it's raining. If I was able to hunt this morning, you'd be on a green field in the blind, so you don't get wet, and just wait the turkeys out, because they're going to eventually be there. And they're not going to talk a lot, so you don't talk a lot. You just, every once in a while, let out a, or a, you know, just a little bit of noise.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing how far a turkey can actually hear. More than we can understand.
Mm-hmm.
At 100 yards, the way I'm talking right now, I honestly believe a turkey could hear me with no problem whatsoever.
Yeah, I thought their problem with us was the eyes, and they can hear the idea. So yeah. That's why I go to ShopRite, people. Poultry department.
Yeah.
Yeah, Ron, I want to get to one last step. We're up against another break. See, between the hunting fisher right now, my mind's still blown. Listen, Ron, in the run-and-gun scenario,
right?
Again, being safe in the whole bit, you know, you're not stalking people. You're looking, the that you've observed all these years, maybe you're guilty of yourself, we all have been, what do you think is the most common and or the biggest mistake a hunter makes? Bird's there, he knows where it is, and you're in that final, is he coming or not?
Moving, not knowing what the bird is doing or where the bird's at.
Okay, you have a general idea. Again, that's the thing. That's what happens. But you have the general idea. You hear a gobble. It's been a few minutes since he gobbled. He's around here somewhere. And that's the flip of the coin, man.
Yeah, and I'm as guilty as the next person because I'm impatient and I've been busted. Well, actually, it happened on me opening day of a week. I heard the bird and it wasn't working like I wanted it to. And it was still that half hour before the sunrise type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I tried to put the move to get to close, to get him within 100 yards of it, and he busted me because he was in the tree. So, I mean, you know.
I had a phone call about that, Ron. There was someone in the woods, sorry, man. They said,
as soon as it happened, I said,
Jonesy messed up, man.
You dumb rookie. You know why? You know, but that's the thing. If you're going to move, especially in D week, if you're going to move, move back, move away from it.
Good point.
Trying to pull him in that extra. So double teaming in D week really works a lot. It works really good too. You put your gunner up on that edge of the field, but your caller goes back into the woods, 30, 40, even 50 yards back in. All right. A lot of times if you notice when a tom is with a hen, a lot of times they're 20 yards or so from the hen, and he'll howl in full strut.
Right.
You know, so you always just try to cut that distance. Double team, it always works good. Also on a roost in D week, all right, one of the tricks I will do is I go in really early. I know he's in the tree. I go to the spot that I don't want him to come down on. And I will go, and this is unethical. Not unethical, that's the wrong word. Unorthodox.
There you go. Gee, man, you made me break out in a sweat, Jones. Yeah. You're killing me.
unorthodox. What I will do is, you still got half hour, 45 minutes before shooting time.
Right.
I will go in and I'll do a bunch of yelps and you know, sounds in the spot that I don't want him to go down on. Then I move around to where I want him to go in and just be quiet.
There you go. All right, thanks for these tips. Listeners, Crunch Time Gobblers this week and next. Before I let you go, Mr. Jones, I understand you have a South Jersey Trapper's Rendezvous coming up pretty soon. What's the deal here? We got a minute. Let it go.
Well, we got two of them. We got June 1st in Piney Hollow Gun Club in Franklinville.
Down here, yeah.
3 to 7, yeah. And then we have June 8th, we have one up at the Croton Gun Club in Flemington.
That's up in Huntington.
We're having two trapping rendezvous. That's for the new trappers especially. That's biting the bit at getting their supplies and learning. We're going to talk about everything about snaring, how to build a snare, supports, where to hang them, how to hang them. There's 4 hours of education that's free. All they got to do is just show up.
There's a magic word. This is free. People want to find out more about this. Jonesy, where do they go?
They can go either to Facebook to my page, or they can give us a call at 856-863-4168.
Jones, thanks for sharing. Crunch time gobblers, people. This is, to me anyway, well, any hunt's a challenge for me because, well, Jonesy knows me. Well, Jones, thanks for your tips, man. Let's just get out there. Opportunities are still there. You have a permit. It is crunch time. And taking Ronnie's tips, you can do it. Ron, best to Donna and the whole crew. We'll see you soon.
All right, buddy. I'll see you later.
Sean Hannity.
You know, look at the price of everything. Eggs, you know, what you were paying in 2020, you're almost paying double. If you like frozen pizza, even that's a massive percentage. Butter and potato chips and cereal and milk, just the basics. What you could buy 4 years ago versus what you can buy today is 36% less. It's unreal.
Sean Hannity on South Jersey's Talk Station, WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Fox News, I'm Chris DeMeo. 26 congressional Democrats signing a letter urging President Biden to reverse the ban on Israeli military aid. Congressman Jared Moskowitz, one of them.
Where is the pressure on Hamas so that the Palestinian people can get to a ceasefire and so that the Israeli families and the American families can get the hostages back? Right. It's only pressure on one side. We will not have a ceasefire just with Israel.
President Biden repeatedly has cautioned Israel not to invade Hamas. Donald Trump's New York hush money trial wrapping up for the week. The former president once again calling the case political as he left the New York courtroom.
It's to damage crooked Joe Biden's political opponent, happens to be me.
Next week, prosecutor star witness will take the stand, former Trump lawyer Michael Cohen. America's listening to Fox News.
Your WPG Talk Radio 95.5 AccuWeather forecast for South Jersey. For today, mostly cloudy and warmer with a high of 64. For tonight, cloudy with a couple of showers late, low 46. For tomorrow, mostly cloudy and cooler with a thunder shower with a high of 56. Tomorrow night, partly cloudy with a low of 41. On Monday, sunny, pleasant, and warmer with a high of 70. Monday night, mainly clear, low 53. I'm AccuWeather's Caitlin Lawrence on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Okay, we were talking turkeys and taciturn toms, man. Crunch time gobblers. The striper bites begin. Bluefish roll over. The fluke season's open. We know all that. Sea bass is going to open on the 17th. What about weakfish, Tom P? Weakfish guys are like woodcock hunters or the dry fly guys that are fly fishing, you know, in these mountain streams, whatever. Very quiet. They just do not share. Weakfish have been making a comeback, albeit slowly over these years. Want to keep it quiet, but just fantastic fishing opportunities for the weakies. That is out there. You just have to make the time. The time we're finding is late afternoon, early evening, in the dark, first light. But where do you look for weakies? Well, join us online right now, extremely special guest. You've heard me mention him over the seasons, especially when it comes to catching the biggest summer flounder, a.k.a. fluke of my life behind Avalon Yacht Club. In the back, Captain Al Crudelli, legendary South Jersey coast, inshore, back bay, and offshore angler. He's joining us right now. We're going to talk weakies for a while. Again, nobody wants to talk weakies. They are there, and some of the tide runners. Captain Al is an ace when it comes to the weakfish, and also in the fall, the specks. Yeah, the specks. That's October, November. That's grist for another show. Captain Crew, thanks for joining us. How you doing, man?
How are you, Tom? Good talking to you.
Listen, by the way, the reports you get when Captain Al Crudelli is on the George Poveromo Saltwater Seminar Series stage on that panel, Crew, you knocked him out, man.
Yeah, it was a good time. That was a great time. It was great. It was a good bunch of guys to be on the trip with.
Crew, you've done that several times, so you know you're in good company when George Poveromo gives the call, man. So, Al, you turned me on to weakfish years ago in the back, and it's not, you know, back when they were actually numerous in the 90s. They seem to crash. It's one fish now, or what is it, 13 inches, whatever. But, Al, have there not been some specimen weakies being caught, especially the past couple of years?
Yeah, they're definitely making a comeback. I think what is more anglers probably lost patience with them when they were a little slow than they should have. There's been a big weak fish, a big shrimp push this year, and it's really grass shrimp and sand shrimp in the back.
Ooh.
And it's really made them kind of crazy. We caught them as early as March this year, Tom.
As early as when?
March 29th, the first one was caught, which
Whoa.
Was five days short of a record. I caught the first one in mid-March, I believe in 2007, and I haven't seen one that early since. But it has to be because of the shrimp background.
So, Al, the abundance of shrimp, better water quality, great reproduction. I don't remember, this much shrimp in the back.
It has to be the water quality improving, Tom, because as everybody knows, the water has been crystal clear the last couple of years, at least down my way here. It's certainly happening. The best time to go when they're feeding on a shrimp, I've found the fish for weak fish is in the morning and at the lower tide phases, which is a little different than if we used to fish for them before, which kind of narrows your time down a little bit, but it's definitely worth it. And I've seen some 6 to 7 pound specimens rather regularly this year.
Say that one more time, crew. Rather regularly?
Rather regularly.
Wow.
Rather regularly. Yeah, they're. It's almost, my little nephew has got the privilege of catching the first one in Seattle this year, and he was the one who caught that one back in March,
mm-hmm.
and he's been catching them all through April and right into fluke season here.
Al, they seem very stealthy as they move in. We know the flounder, aka fluke, they come piling in the back. Weeks, all of a sudden they're there. And then all of a sudden they're gone. And Al, have you found over the years that even in getting towards the summer, June into July, there's still weeks in the back?
Oh, they stay in the back. We always had traditionally two runs, Tom. There's the one that goes now, and then even though Mother's Day is a little early, we don't call it the Mother's Day run. It is a little earlier, but now we have a Father's Day run also. So the fish will be a little smaller, but mid-June they'll be in the inlet thick also.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's yearly. It's been a yearly occurrence. Now, with the grass shrimp thing, they may stay in the back more. It all remains to be seen. We're going to have to monitor it a little bit, but it is. It's also turning the fluke into maniacs too. The fluke love the shrimp also. So any areas you know that are full of that kind of stuff is where you want to be fishing.
Al had a 21-inch fluke. A guy caught showed me he had opened it, filleted it. Al, the stomach was almost not quite the size of a cue ball full of grass shrimp, some little peeler crabs. Wow.
Yep. The crustaceans are definitely taking a beating this year. And another thing that'll help the weak fish a little bit also is. I mean, we have a little pop of bluefish, but they don't play well together. So when the years where there's a lot of blues, the weak fish tend to hide a little more. But we did have a little run of blues. There's a few here and there, but they're certainly not like they've been in the past.
Joe's on the Rock and Fin line this morning is Captain Al Crudelli, legendary South Coast Jersey angler, Back Bay, inshore and offshore, from weekies to tuna. I mean, this guy does it all. But I want to key on weak fish. But right now, as you had taught me, tutored me, what have you, going like the last light, again, predicated on tide too, I realize that. But we seem to have the best luck in low light or dark conditions. And then, first light till the sun actually, cracks their rising, it's halfway up. Now you're saying that with as many grass shrimp and sands or whatever out there, you can catch them during the day with regularity?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. As long as you're in a spot that's not very noisy. you know, off Water Creek or where you want to be, and the outgoing tide moves the shrimp into the perfect spot for weak fish and the fluke to eat. You know, you may have to scale down your rig some. 1/8 ounce, the 1/4 ounce leadheads. There's so many quality leadheads out there these days, Tom. Mm-hmm. That, you know, look around. You know, the old lures, the old twisters and things like that still work. As you know, for years you supplied me with twisters all I needed, but there's a lot of new stuff out there now,
oh, yeah,
too.
Oh, yeah.
you know, there's tons of new lures out. I don't want to mention any in particular, but there are some that are, that I don't know, am I allowed?
Go ahead. Name it. We're informing the people, man. Go.
Yeah. There's some of the new Phenom twisters that are phenomenal. They're mm-hmm. the double color. And you want to match your colors to your grays up to reds. Some brownish reds have been working well, mm-hmm. and also the regular old white and silver fleck. Albino matches your shrimp like nothing else. So, you know, we want to think opening night is another great call.
Mm-hmm.
All those colors will mimic grass shrimp, and that's what we and slowly.
I was just going to ask you that. Go.
Yeah. The entire water column needs to be fished from the top to the bottom. You don't want to immediately just let your lure fall right to the bottom. That's why a layer lead head works better. As soon as your lure hits the water, close the bail and let it fall through the water column until you find where they're biting. I usually give an area 10 to 20 good quality casts before I move along. And I mean quality casts,
yeah.
I mean no grass.
Yep.
No grass on your line. No foul, but no backlashes. Good quality cast that you should have got a bite on. If you feel like you didn't, or you didn't, then you should move on. But give it a little bit of time. And don't forget, you can always back up on a place. You may not be someplace when the tide's correct, mm-hmm. and you might want to back up. But all this should be kept in, all this should be kept in a notebook of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
That way you have something to refer back to. I can't overemphasize about keeping it in a notebook, guys. Very important.
During the day, sun's out or bright sky, what have you, will you find the weakest? Will they gravitate to the deeper holes?
Yeah, they'll soak to the bottom during the day, but that doesn't mean they'll stop feeding, especially if the tide's pushing the bait to them. Again, they don't have a lot of nuisance fish bothering this year. So the bluefish bottom, that'll make them high a little more. But no, it's totally possible to catch them all day right now.
Yeah, Captain Al, second question is, we've seen weak fish. We've been on them where they were just, it was like putting me in an Italian deli or a bakery, like mayhem. And where they've been, we've actually watched them turn away from baits. Or can they be as line shy? In other words, would you go with recommend a fluoro leader or standard mono work, yeah, or what?
Yeah, your 8 to 15 pound leader is. I usually start with 15. If I'm not getting the bites, I think I'll scale down to 8. And fluorocarbon with the water clarity we've had the last couple of years is. I'm using it on everything in the back water for fluke fishing, striper fishing, and weak fish. Just different tests. I usually don't go over 20 if I'm looking to catch a weak fish. 15 and 20 is what I use on my fluke rigs. So, you know, if you use a small finesse lure, you may have to step down to 8 pound. Mm-hmm. You know, Seaguar 8 pound is my go-to.
Captain Crew, before I let you go here, just the conservation aspect. I remember when the limit drop was 3, then it went to 1 fish. And whatever, now all the times like in Ocean City in late September, mid-September, still warm enough to wet weight, all the spikes. Shout out to Jack Neal, man. We used to do this at Steve Branca, crazy times.
Yeah.
Right up there on 23rd Street at the end of the board, the last block before the end of the boardwalk there. Al, you remember massive school, that still happens that time of year, of spikes coming down anywhere from 6 to 8, 9 inches. And then.
Yeah.
Where do they go? We're going to have a great weeky day in the spring. Where do they go? There's some articles about maybe the stripers are eating or something. they're making a comeback, albeit slowly. We only have a couple minutes left. Your take on the Weeki situation then and now?
I think that the patterns are changing, just like most of our other fish here in South Jersey, as far as, geographics, if you will. I think that we're slowly switching into, like with this global warming or whatever you believe in, that we're slowly starting to get, like Virginia, North Carolina's weather is more, you can tell by the way the winters have been the last couple of years, more mild. I think we're just, and that's got a lot to do with the fact that, you know, that the weak fish are migrating offshore. The fluke are migrating offshore. There's things being caught out. And these guys are out catching weak fish where they're sea bass fishing offshore in the winter.
Listen to me. When I was doing the reports from Philly Daily News, the Big Jamaican, the 125 Big Jamaican, Captain Howard Bogan, I said, Cap, give me your catch word. What do you got? Give me something notable. Well, we got some 8-pound weak fish. So I said, whoa, that's in between out of 5 and 6 pounds. Weak fish and blue fish. You're right, crew. Offshore, man.
Yep, that's something that I don't remember ever happening. I've been fishing for those sea bass since I was a kid. We never really saw that many of them out there, you know, the weak fish, occasionally. But I believe that everything's migration patterns are slightly changing. We're not going to know what really it all comes down to. It's until a couple of years of research and work and repetitive patterns, you know. But we haven't kept it really. We haven't kept the weak fish to eat in a couple of years. That, you know, as far as fish to eat for our family, they weren't the best. But you know, they were okay.
To me, Al, they're like ling. They're like ling. They have to be fresh. They don't freeze well.
Exactly.
They have to be fresh
and cared for correctly. Right, exactly. The eating the day they were caught is definitely the best way to go with weak fish. They don't stay well, as far as the refrigerator cleans, but they certainly are a lot of fun to catch. There's no feeling like that head shaking that pool.
Yeah.
You know, tide runners, they are.
They are something. Well, Captain Crew, thanks for sharing your expertise with us. Hope to see you again sometime later this spring or early summer. By the way, Captain Al, it was a sad note. His Sandy girl, probably the greatest swamper in South Jersey history. What an amazing beagle. The only beagle I have ever seen. Me and the lovely Demarie were going perch fishing down there by Tuckahoe. And there she is walking along the path. Now, when do you see a beagle not on a leash? Because all I want to do is smell and hunt. And she was with her daddy, Captain Al Crew. And Al, one of the most best behaved and the most affectionate beagles and one of the baddest ass rabbit hunting dogs I have ever had the opportunity to hunt with. I had to give an ode to the Sandy girl.
Thank you very much, Don. I miss you so bad. Hopefully, I'll be back in the woods with another one in a year or so.
We'll see you on the water in a couple of weeks, crew. We got a date, man.
Thanks, Tom.
See you, brother.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Hi, this is Gordon Deal. Coming up on This Weekend, the unemployment rate among recent college grads is higher than the national average. We'll have tips for new job hunters in today's environment. Also, is technology helping to lower IQ scores? We'll have analysis. Plus, treatments to keep off your weight after losing it with a drug like Ozempic. And how courthouses have turned to dogs to help some witnesses. That and more coming up on This Weekend.
This morning at 6 on WPG Talk Radio 95.5. Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5. South Jersey's Talk Station.
Yeah, wrapping up on Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of May 11th and 12th. Hey, we had some good news. We had some good news early coming in from our good friend Jerry Vessel, Wildwood Fishing and Boating Expo. So last week, what's happened? What's this? In January, what's this? You added a day. Joining us online right now is Jerry Vessels with an update. The wildly successful Wildwood Fishing and Boating Expo is now what, Jerry? 3 days? Fill us in, little brother.
We are, Tommy P. It's always great to hear from you. Great time of year for for thinking about new boat purchases, even for next winter. It's really close. We're 3 days, buddy. We were 2 days for a long time. We decided to up it one more day. The demand by the boat dealers, because they sell boats.
They sell boats. I was in that show for twice. I said, man, I'm seeing sold. Jared, they knocked it out, man.
Oh, they had a fantastic season. It's the first one out the gate. And we're coming out yelling and screaming, buddy. 3 days down here in Wildwood.
Do you have the dates yet?
Yes, January 10th, 11th, and 12th.
Babe, it's 7 months away, but mark the calendar, because before you know it, it's Thanksgiving. Remember that, Jerry, we were talking? Oh, yeah, it was this time last year. Next thing you know, Jerry's calling up. Hey, man, the boots are selling like crazy. Wow, it's already November, October.
Sold out in mid-November last year. So, you know, I mean, a couple months in advance, we're sold out. Right now, we're probably with return vendors again in that 70% mark. Everything is going perfect. Add it that extra day because the boat dealers are like, hey, man, we're set up. Let's go. And I agree. Salesmen sell. Let's go. 3 days this year.
Listen, 3 days is premium seminars. There's a lot of vendors tackled there. It's a great show. Already we have to get in there because it's going to be 3 days. Don't be surprised, because there are a lot of people, well, we're going to go Sunday morning or get there 11 because it closes at 2, or we're just going to try to get there Saturday. It is packed. It's crowded, long lines. You spread out for 3 days. Jerry, I say your attendance is going to easily jump by 50%. More opportunity, man.
I hope so, Tommy. And because who does this? We're going to give away yet another Yeti 65 this year. We gave away two last year. So we'll be giving one Friday, Saturday, and Sunday this year. I mean, still the same price, still the same great show. We just added some more hours in another day.
There you go, Jerry. Well, I know you're jamming out there, busy Saturday, getting ready for President Trump to get down there. Jerry's with the fire department. Jerry, you got your hands full. Thanks for joining us for a couple of minutes, brother. By the way, how's that incredible family?
Oh, they're doing awesome. Baby girl number one is home. Baby girl two is graduating high school. She's leaving me soon, which is going to break my heart.
Oh.
Baby girl three is graduating eighth grade. Watch out
for baby girl three. She'll be running for office, I say, within the next three or four years, man.
she's wicked, man.
Either that or heading the State Department's the State Police Detective Unit. Oh, wow, she is amazing.
Something.
Well, Jerry, man, we hope to see you on the water one time this summer for a long-distance fluke trip, you and Dee Marie. I'll be on the dock with my crab net and sandwiches. I'll wait for you guys to come back.
That sounds like a plan to me.
Take care, Jerry. Be good. Congratulations on the third day. We'll see you, man.
Thanks, brother, man. Yep. See ya.
That'll do it for this week on Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weather's a little gnarly, so I'll get out and enjoy. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless our first responders and law enforcement. May 11, 1968, Big Ben Pagliarulli married my mom, Angela Maria Lowe. I was adopted, 5 or 6 months later, changed my name. Drove the nuns crazy the first week. I don't know how to spell it. I went from a four-letter last name to 10, with 10, 12 letters. Something. I can't believe it was that long. Big Ben, we miss you. Mom, we miss you. But Big Ben taking me up to Sawmill Lake and High Point into the Flatbrook, getting it all started. Branchville Park, Long Branch Fishing Pier. Remember that? The frostfish and the crabbing. Oh, people, get out and enjoy. See you next week. Rack and Fin Radio.